when I was 17, my dad left my mom, and I was stuck, you know, at home with my mom, and not like being really angsty, and that makes me mad, and I wish it never happened. But at the same time, if my dad didn't leave, I wouldn't have been with my mom. I wouldn't have had to go get a job. I wouldn't have worked at Disneyland. I wouldn't have met my friend Kelly, who's friends with Ben, whose girlfriend was friends with Stevie, who's been my wife for 20 years. So it's one of those things where what loss teaches me is like, yeah, the past happened and it might be crappy, but think about where you are now. Think about how you don't have to, you know, dwell on that. Live in the present. Deal with your smoke monsters now. By the end of this, when all's said and done, you're going to be really happy that you have the people in your life that you have.
If you're watching on YouTube, please like, subscribe, and leave a comment about the episode. And if you're watching on Spotify or listening on a traditional podcast platform, please follow, rate us 5 stars, and leave a review if you would be so kind. Thank you.
Welcome to the Way to Know You podcast, season 4, episode 39. My name is Nick Rounds, and I will be your host. My next guest is an expert in all things regarding the ABC show Lost. Originally creating his Lost podcast, Dharma Lars, in 2006, he went deep into Lost fandom and came out the other side as part of an extremely passionate community. Today, my guest is a producer of the upcoming documentary Getting Lost, directed by Taylor Morden, the director of the last blockbuster and pick it up, Ska in the 90s. Ralph Oppel. Wait, I know you. How are you today?
I'm doing great. I really am. It's been a wild week at the time of this recording. We just announced another big name in the movie, and it's like, it's crazy, you know, being a podcaster in 2006, you don't think, hey, one of these days this show I'm talking about is going to be like a cultural phenomenon and I'll be making a documentary about it. But here I am, and we're doing it. It's been wild.
That you're going to be shoulder to shoulder with the hunkiest cowboy ever.
Yeah. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I was surprised to see Josh Holloway show up, and I was always excited for you guys. Getting way, way ahead of myself here, but we're going to talk all about the Lost documentary and talk about all the amazing work that you've been doing on the Lost documentary. But I was really surprised to see that photo, and it was really cool to see you shoulder to shoulder with him. So,
yeah.
For context.
You know, it's funny, like a lot of people, eagle-eyed followers, notice that the slate picture that we took of Josh says something like November 13th or something. It happened a while ago. And it's been something that we've been sitting on for, you know, closer to 3 months and just waiting to be able to get the opportunity to announce him. He was our 36th interview for the doc. We are now at 61. So this is how long ago that was. So I mean, he might be one of the bigger names that we've gotten, but we're not done. We're still working our way up the call sheet, the Lost call sheet. So, but it's a fun one.
That's really exciting. We're gonna tear into all that stuff. For context, Josh Holloway played Sawyer on the show Lost. One of the major characters there. But yeah, let's dig into like your origin story with Lost, Ralph. Like, talk to me about like where does your story with Lost begin? Where does that begin at?
It starts in a parking lot in downtown Disney. That's where my story of Lost starts. I was aware of the show. I didn't watch it. The week of the premiere, I'm working at Disneyland in custodial. Me and a manager go to check the downtown Disney lot to make sure there aren't any, you know, big bags of junk, because guests would leave big, huge chunks of garbage out there because it's a parking lot, and, you know, they paid their money and felt that they have the right to do that. Anyway, we're bored. It was a weekday in downtown Disney. There's nothing going on. And so we go out to the lot and we're walking around, and my friend Patrick, who was a manager at the time, said, "Hey, did you watch the show Lost?" I'm like, "No, I don't watch Lost. No. He's like, "Dude, it's really cool." He's like, "You got to check it out. It's like the craziest thing I've ever seen." I said, "Okay, you know, sure." So like, being what I considered a good friend, when I went home, I just went to my TiVo. I had a TiVo at the time. This is early days of like before it was like known as DVR. There was just TiVo. And I looked up Lost. I hit the, there goes my thumbs up. I have a Mac for anyone watching the little bubble. I forget about that sometime. So I set up a season pass. I just hit record for Lost. And a couple days after the premiere, they re-aired the pilot part one and part two on like Friday night. So what I do is I don't think anything of it. There's my DVR, or my TiVo is just like full of just stuff that I probably should have watched or whatever. So the next day, it's Saturday, me and my wife Stevie are going to be going out to go get lunch. I'm starving and I just want to get out of the house. I'm sitting there, instead of pacing back and forth, which I usually do, instead of fidgeting with things, and I just sit down and I just press play on Lost. And I got about halfway through and I stopped it. And when Stevie was done getting ready, instead of going out to eat, I said, "Sit down, you got to check this thing out." And we ended up watching past the part I watched. I watched about half the first, I think I watched the first pilot part one, and we ended up watching pilot part one and two. And then that was it. We were live starting week two of Lost every week, watching at 8 o'clock on Wednesdays. Yeah. So that's how Lost began. I also didn't, soon after that, I left my job to do writing. I have proof of that, but I was looking for something to listen to while I was writing. And I'm like, as you saw, I'm a Mac user. So I have like the Apple stuff. I have all the Apple stuff
and all the emojis going off at the same time. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, I'm listening to iTunes. And in iTunes, there is a section called podcasts. I'm like, I don't know what this is. Pop on podcast. And it didn't really make sense to me, but I saw there was just categories of shows and stuff that you can like listen to. And I'm like, oh, there's all this kind of weird stuff. Let's check and see if there's like, what am I like, this was like season two of Lost. So I'm like, Lost, I want to see if there's any shows about Lost. Because you would see other shows like Ellen, I think, had one where they took clips from her show and, you know, like The Daily Show, I think, had a podcast, and like Shark Week had a podcast, and they would just post like audio clips on, for the podcast. So I'm like, oh, well, let's check Lost. And so I started listening to a show called The Transmission, which was turned out to be a husband and wife team. I thought it was an official sanctioned thing and didn't know that just anyone can make these things. So I listened to Jay and Jack. That's how I met Jack, I met Jack and Jay Glatfelter. Jay, you might know from like over at Geek Dad Life.
Jay's been on the show before. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So this was around the time of iPod Photo. iPod Photo was out, not iPod Video yet. And so Jay didn't have artwork. And I'm like, I can't have this empty square next to it. I need to do something. So I created a logo so that I had something on my iPod to listen to Jay and Jack. And they ended up using that logo and we became friends. There was another show called Make Your Own Kind of Music with Scott and Steve. Scott and Steve is an inside joke from the show. It was actually hosted by Dylan and Craig. Dylan left for the Navy and Craig was left on his own and missed like 4 weeks straight where he didn't podcast. And this is a show I loved. So me and my friend Ben, where I told my friend Ben, let's do a podcast. We'll cover those four episodes, send that off to Craig. with the hopes that we caught you up. We'll pretend we're Scott and Steve. And then once that's over with, you can continue doing your own Scott and Steve show with somebody else, which is what happened. So Craig comes back, brings the show back of Scott and Steve with a guy named Ryan. And in the first episode back, they made the announcement that Ben and I were going to be part of their network as a whole separate podcast. That was news to me. That was I didn't say I was like, hey, yeah, we'll keep on podcasting. No, this was supposed to be a one-off thing, which ended up being the Darmlars. And then from there, it just, you know, took off. I've been podcasting ever since. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. 18 years. Is that right? What,
yeah. Something like that.
Something like that. Yeah. It's
crazy. What are Darmlars for people that are uninitiated?
So in the show, there's a thing called the Dharma Initiative, which is on the island. It's a group of scientists that are studying all the abnormalities on this island, and they receive food via a food drop. A helicopter food drop drops pallets of food, and they have their own brand. It's almost like a Kirkland brand or something. Like, it's a real generic, like, but it's set up with the Dharma Initiative logo. So it'd be like Dharma beer, Dharma macaroni and cheese, Dharma ranch. It would just be like any sort of thing that you would stock your pantry with. It would just have the Dharma logo on it. And Ben and I noticed in the first two episodes we covered before we had a name for our podcast, that there was a box of Darmlars, which was we assumed was Malamars, just the Dharma version of it, which is funny because no other Dharma Initiative food has sort of a catchy name. They right. should have just been called Dharma cookies,
right?
Or Dharma marshmallow cookies, but they adopted the name of Malamars. And so it was the dumbest thing for both of us to notice. And that's how close we were looking at the show, is seeing this box of cookies that's in the background. We just decided to call ourselves that, because we didn't have a name for the show. I'm like, why don't we just call ourselves the Darmlars? Which I believe is actually recorded. That conversation is recorded where we say, why don't we call ourselves the Darmlars?
Nice.
And it was a fairly popular podcast. I mean, podcasting wasn't really big in 2006. It was brand new. And like, I mean, I'm still proud of it. Sorry, Vesper's trying to get up on my
desk. That's all good. I'm wrangling cats as usual, always. My cats were next to me as well. They're both sleeping.
Yeah. If my mic gets bumped, it'll like shut off, and then I have to go into settings and restart it. So it's kind of a pain. Normally I'd let her join, but she took off. But for iTunes, every Saturday they would update or it would be a constant thing where they update rankings. They would have rankings in TV and film, ranking in cooking shows, rankings at whatever categories they had. We got to number 4 in TV and film, like Darmlars. Like, there's no way anybody that's not known, like any celebrity that's known outside of their podcast, We'll hit those numbers. You have to be like, you know, one of those top tier podcasts. I don't even know if like Conan O'Brien gets to number 4 in TV and film. And then right. I think we got down to number, I keep saying that it was 16, but my friend Ryan, who helped produce the show, said we got down to like 10 or something of all podcasts. Like, we got ahead of the Ellen Show. We got ahead of Shark Week. And that was just for like a couple days, but I mean, we were up there. It was pretty cool. Yeah, it was a different, it's a whole different thing back then, podcasting. Yeah.
Yeah. For setting context there, like, I mean, as we were kind of talking about it before, but like, this is your, as you mentioned, like pre Kevin Smith, pre, right. Nerdist.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. So it was definitely the Wild West back then, when not every white dude with a mic had a podcast. It was
right. And there was no ads. Even back then, I don't even think like Hardwick and Nerdist, I don't think they had ads way back then. I think it took a little while for advertisers to realize that, you know, podcasts were kind of a, you know, a great spot to sell things specifically for targeted audience too.
Right.
I remember when Jay and Jack first started getting ad space and I was like, that's, I don't know, dude, that's weird. It was weird. But I've never done an ad on a podcast in the last 18 years.
I have. I did. I've already shilled. So.
Wow. That's great.
It was fun. I mean, I enjoyed doing it. So it was kind of whatever. But yeah, good times. So how did that whole experience of creating that, like how did all that stuff kind of change your life? Because obviously getting up that high and being part of a really rabid community, like that must have like really thrown you into the throes of everything.
I sort of feel like the Darmalars were a little bit of an outlier. Jane Jack, super popular. Transmission, super popular. There were some popular Lost podcasts out there. It got to the point where ABC started doing an official Lost podcast with Damon and Carlton and Chris White. Two of those people are in the dock as of now. When the third one is trying to get in our movie real bad. I never felt like I was super part of the community. Like there was a hardcore fan base for Darmalars, but I never felt like we were part of the larger community. Like there's people who followed Darmalars back in 2006 who I knew from before Darmalars. I knew from the Scott and Steve days, who are still my friends, text messages, Discord channels, like all of that stuff. It's a small, tight knit group. Darmalars, we didn't censor ourselves. We didn't do recaps. A lot of shows would go beat by beat and just rerun the show, which I found kind of dull and boring. So we skipped all that. It's just like, you watch the show, here are two guys that are going to talk about it. If we get excited about something, which I tend to do, I don't watch my language. It was very, very unfiltered. And, you know, people tended to gravitate towards that. We also found that, you know, a lot of young people were listening to podcasts back then because it was kind of a new thing. And so we had an explicit tag on our show. You know, a lot of people have explicit tags now, your Hardwicks and your Kevin Smiths and, you know, stuff like that. But this is before that. So we kind of felt a little bit like outliers, even to the point where now recently, while we're promoting the movie, Taylor, the director of Getting Lost, posted a clip of Dane Cook stand up comedy bit about Lost, which says the F word. And I reposted that to Twitter because it's a funny bit. And someone gave me shit because they're like, oh, leave it to the guy who hosted the Darmalars to post not safe for work content. And I was like, dude, it's been like Lost was over like 14 years ago. And I'm still getting crap for cursing on the internet when like nobody was around. Like we got like, I mean, this nothing to sneeze at. We got something like 27,000 downloads a week, which is great. Jay and Jack were getting like 100,000 downloads per show, and they were doing two shows. It was like 300,000 downloads a week or something. We were small, but it's so funny that that's the impact. Ryan, who worked on the Transmission, the first podcast I ever listened to, recently. Interviewed for our movie Getting Lost, and he brought up the Darmalars and skirted around it, but said, yeah, you had, you know, Jay and Jack, who was a father and son duo. You had him and Jen, which were husband and wife. And then you had the Darmalars that were like rough around the edges and, you know, maybe use colorful language. And I'm like, it's so funny. Like we were like one of the only ones. And I was like, I don't understand. Like it shouldn't be that big a deal, but at the time, man, people were not ready for someone saying the F word about, you know, I don't know, Sawyer
or freaking smoke monster. Yeah.
It was crazy. Like, it's just one of those things. Like we weren't like setting out to like, oh, let's really push the envelope. No, Ben was a friend. Ryan's a friend. Like, these guys are my friends. And this is how we talked. We just happened to be talking about Lost with microphones. And it just, it was unfiltered. And I'm like, I don't see the reason. Like, iTunes allows you to put an explicit tag. Might as well use it, but like, or just let people know, like, hey, I might get excited and say the S word. Like, there's the one review is just titled like potty mouths. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding me, guys, dude. We're like grown-ups. You know, I was married by the time the Darmalar started. I was already married 2 years by the time Darmalar started. And these people are getting mad because me as a grown man has a potty mouth because I said, I don't know, whatever. But it was just okay. Like, but it was nice because we started like filtering out like those kind of people, and our we would get phone calls and that we would play at the end of each episode, and it would just be like, you know, just regular people just being passionate about the show, knowing that they can, you know, say whatever they want. It was nice. It was nice being able to just have that freedom to let loose. You know, I didn't want to have to sit there and read a script or go over a recap. I took notes, Ben took notes, and we're just like, let's go shoot the shit, talk about Lost. And we had a blast doing it. Like, it's, I don't know. It's so funny. It's a weird stigma. We actually made like, we had like a cafe press site or something that had a trucker hat that just had the explicit tag on the front. It was hilarious. It was absolutely hilarious. Now the explicit tag is just an E. It's an right. E in a square. And I don't even know if people know what that means. But back then it said explicit within a red box next to your podcast. And it's almost like a badge of honor because you would scroll through and you'd rarely see that. Rarely see that. And so, you know, you mix that with that bright yellow Darmalar's logo. And I don't know. It just worked.
It just magic worked. In a bottle.
Yeah, it was I really enjoyed it.
So speaking of the Lost fan base specifically, and you capturing a little bit of it, like, what's your take on the Lost fan base now, both back in the day and also like in today? Like, what is your take on it?
So this is kind of what got the documentary going, was the Lost fan base. It's certainly how I pitched it to Michael Giacchino, who's a friend of mine, and he was like, what is this Lost documentary you're working on? Because Michael worked on he did every single episode of Lost. I don't think anybody else touched the music on that show for all 121 episodes or whatever.
As a composer, right?
As a composer, he did every single episode. And so he's very guarded about it. It's, you know, if it's one of his favorite things, if not his favorite thing that he's ever worked on, and it's amazing. But when he found out I was doing the documentary, the first thing he said was, what's the deal with this documentary? Like, what do you, and I told him, I said, here's the deal. I said, Michael, you've done Star Wars, you've done Batman, you've done Spider-Man, you do Marvel, you've Planet of the Apes, you've done all these things with very opinionated fandoms. Like Batman, there's no other more intense fandom than like Batman, Star Wars, and Marvel. And I'm like, you've done all those. And luckily he's so good that he can come out clean and not get too ripped apart by the fandoms. But I said, you know how it is. Right now, anyone who was that way about Lost, long gone. They hated the finale or whatever they did. They went away. They didn't know that you were supposed to go on social media and continue to like rub salt in the wound or be an a-hole about it. I said, so we're focusing on that in the time of Release the Snyder Cut people and the toxic stuff around those people, with Star Wars people, like being so angry and vocal about, you know, specific characters and, you know, the genders of those characters. It's just this massive sort of just every fandom has a huge bunch of buttholes. With Lost, it's like, it's almost like panning for gold. Like Lost, you had like a pan full of dirt, and over the last, 10 years, it's slowly been sifting out the sand, and the gold is being left behind. And that's what it is. Like, the Lost fan base now are fans. They're people that like it, and the people who are still discussing it. The Lost fans are, the ones that stuck around are smart and still trying to figure stuff out. And so I essentially told Michael, I said, that's what we want to talk about. We want to talk about the fandom. We want to talk about how it's possible to enjoy something and not have feel like you have to rag on it or try to like bend the creator's arms to change things. We're not fan casting Shadow, we're not like signing petitions to get rid of or remake The Last Jedi. We're not doing any of that stuff. Like, Lost fans, they're still out there. They're still on like message boards, because that's what we had back then. We had message boards. Twitter came around like during season 3 of Lost or something.
Right.
But it's one of those things, like, we're still out there debating. Like, you can still find people talking about Lost on the internet. And they're still theorizing about it. And it's a great community for that. Like, every once in a while, you'll just hear a guy, it's like spout off some crazy theory and you're like, you're nuts. But you know what, if that were to happen, this thing over here would make more sense. It's one of those things where I know a lot of people are mad at Lost because it didn't answer all the questions, but I think of it like a puzzle. Once a puzzle is complete, it's kind of boring.
Right.
So not having all the pieces, it's fun to sort of hash things out, and I think the community is still around doing that stuff. Jack from the Lost podcast with Jay and Jack did a rewatch podcast about Lost, went through every episode a couple years back. I sat in on a few of those, and again, new theories, new conversations. This show's been talked to death, but people don't know everything, which is great.
Yeah, there's something to be said about that mystery box and like how much stuff you can debate over, like who shot at them.
The outrigger? You talking about the outrigger?
At the outrigger, yeah.
Can I tell you something?
What's that?
I didn't know that was a thing until we started shooting. Day 2 of our shoot, 2 different people brought up this outrigger. I'm like, I just assumed it was them in a different, like they're like 2 seconds behind or something. I don't know. I'm like, this is like, I didn't really put that much stock into it, but people really want to know. People really want to know about it, to the point where we asked Damon Lindelof, the creator of Lost. We asked him about the outrigger. So,
that's awesome.
Whether he answered it or not, that's up to you to find out in the doc, but yeah. Yeah.
That's the thing I have to tiptoe around, is because like I want to ask you a ton of questions about stuff.
Ask me anything, dude. I'll tell you pretty much anything.
Okay.
Pretty much. I mean, if you ask me a question about the show and are looking for answers, I can probably come up with some theories, because that's what I do. But I don't know if we've got anything crazy. I don't think we've got anything crazy. There's one thing that's kind of become a big deal between me and Taylor. That I can't talk about here.
That's fine.
If you're a fan of Lost, I will let you know this. It's completely changed my view of Lost 100% front to back.
Wow.
So, for the better, for the better. I'm really excited for people to find out this, these things that we've been told.
Yeah. So, well, yeah. I'm excited to watch the documentary. So, I mean, stepping back a little bit, I mean, how did you and Taylor join forces to create the Lost documentary in the first place?
Taylor listened to Darmalars. Taylor was a Darmalars fan. And what's funny is, when Facebook came around during the making, or while Lost was being produced, again, not there before, but somewhere halfway through, because I first met Jorge Garcia through MySpace. He sent me a message through MySpace because he listened to Darmalars. So here's how I met Taylor. We became Facebook friends, I don't know, 2008, whenever, because he was a Dharma Lars fan. Cool. Awesome. I have like 1,000+ Facebook friends. That's not a brag. It's just a fact. I somehow accumulated that many people. There's a lot of people who are like, oh, they must be a fan of Dharma Lars. They must be a fan of Kaiju Podcast. They must, you know, they could be from anywhere. They could be old coworkers, you know, that I used to work with, you know, 15 years ago. I don't know. It's just Facebook. There's a lot of people. Taylor is one of those people, and the algorithm never sort of found each other. I never saw a post from Taylor Morden. I would see, maybe every once in a while I'd get a thumbs up from him on a post. Maybe, I don't know. I'm like, oh, that's probably a guy who listens to Dharma Lars, whatever. Anyway, I do a podcast called the Casino Skunk Secret Society. It's my Patreon channel. And I was doing these things called impromptu interviews. It's essentially something like this. But what I would do is go on social media and say, is there anybody who can drop what they're doing right now and jump on a microphone right now so I can interview you? And whoever responded first, boom, send them a link, jump online, and interviewing within 5 minutes to, you know, I don't know who they are. So I do one of these and I get a response from Taylor. Yeah, I'll do it. I'm like, okay, cool. Send him a DM. Here's the link. In between the time I said, okay, here's the link, and the time we jump on the mics, I click on his profile real quick just to kind of get a sense of who he is. And his banner on Facebook was him holding up Blockbuster VHS tapes in front of a Blockbuster, and it says The Last Blockbuster. And I'm like, what's this? The Last Blockbuster? I'm VHS dude on Vine when Vine was big, and on Instagram, if you go to VHS dude, all of that stuff was stuff taken from my VHS collection on Twitter and stuff. So VHS dude is me. I'm like, how did I not know about this movie about Blockbuster? And so I jump on, start talking with Taylor, and I said, dude, I noticed that you directed a documentary about Blockbuster. He's like, yeah, it's coming out in a couple of weeks. I'm like, that's rad. I'm VHS dude. He's like, oh, no shit. I've been following you forever. And we're both Facebook friends since 2008. Had no idea. Had no idea. So that interview is available on YouTube. If you go to Casino Skunk YouTube channel, you can listen to me and Taylor talk for the very first time and discover this stuff. And a couple weeks later, I get a phone call, or I get a text message or a DM or something where he's like, hey, do you got a second? I'm like, yeah, sure. And he called me and he's like, hey, my wife and I really want to take a trip to Hawaii. And we're trying to think of a way that we can, you know, make it a business thing. So we were thinking about doing a documentary about Lost. I'm like, oh, that's great. Cool. Awesome, man. And he's like, do you want to produce it? I'm like, what do you mean? What do you mean? I really like produce the documentary. And he's like, yeah. I said, no. I said, I've never done that. He's like, well, I mean, you produce podcasts. I said, my whole life, like, I've been wanting to make movies. I wrote 2 screenplays in that time when I started listening to podcasts. Didn't do anything with them, but it was a dream of mine. And I said, maybe let me think about it. He's like, okay, you know, don't worry. And so I talked to Stevie, my wife, about it, and she's like, hey, you should do it. I'm like, yeah, I guess. I mean, all I'm doing right now is door dashing. Oh, he literally called me. I was sitting in a parking lot eating my lunch. And I told him, I give him a call back, and I said, you know, like, here's the thing, man. I'm going to be honest with you. Like, I haven't done anything like this before, and I really am afraid that I'm going to mess it up. I don't know. I said maybe, but he said, listen, he's like, I've done a few of these things. You're not going to mess it up. The only thing you can do is make it better. So he said, you know, he's it'd be really hard to mess it up. So if you do, I mean, I can't even imagine what that would be for you to mess it up. But he said, you know, you get podcast guests, right? I'm like, yeah, that's all you need to do. It's just, we're filming them instead of talking to them. And he's like, I'm doing the interviewing and you just have to just, I don't know, help get people to be in the movie. And it's been about almost 2.5 years since that phone call. And like I said, we have something like 62 interviews currently sitting there. And, you know, it's the combined effort of both of us. You know, there's some people I got, there's some people he got. There's some people we both worked hard on getting. And, you know, it's one of those things where, like, you know, I find myself sitting here at my desk and writing emails to Josh Holloway's people. You know, and it's really tough. There's a lot of gatekeepers. It's really tough getting a hold of these people, but we ultimately got a hold of Josh. Taylor did. And we like had like 2 days or something to for me to get up to Santa Barbara from Anaheim and for him and his wife to get down to Santa Barbara from Oregon. But it's like, it's Josh Holloway and he's leaving to go shoot a new series in a couple days. So let's just do it. I'm like, let's just do it. And so we did it, you know, it's a nerve wracking thing, but nowadays I feel way more comfortable about being a producer than I did, a couple of years ago. We've been through it. We've been through it. And the stuff I've seen just looks amazing. Like, I find myself, if I'm watching like a Netflix documentary or something where there's people being interviewed, there's definitely somewhere I'm like, oh, I think ours looks better than that. I think ours is going to be really good. And I'm glad I don't have to edit because, again, we have over 60 interviews. Majority of them, with the exception of like 3 or 4, they're all 3-camera setups. So it's a lot.
Yeah,
it's a lot of footage. Yeah, and we also got Alex Porter, this guy named Alex Porter, back in 2009, was making his own documentary about the Lost Fandom, which never got completed, and he signed off over 100 hours of footage to us to use however we see fit. Wow. In the documentary. And then we got all the stuff, the video stuff from Jay and Jack, was handed out, like all this. We have so much footage. So I'm glad I don't have to edit. I really do.
Yeah. Or even touch the DVD bonus extras and stuff like that. Cause even that
we're trying to do, we're going to pack the Blu-rays. We have to, we have so much stuff. We talked to one of the original guys from the writer's room, Javier Grillo, Mark's Watch. And his interview is like a perfect, like 2 hours of just amazing. It's almost like a TED talk for Lost. And it's like, it's something where I told Taylor, I said, you know, I kind of want this just to be able to, someone could watch this whole thing played out. Steve, who is a cameraman, hasn't seen an episode. He's seen the pilot of Lost and that's it. And he's a cameraman. He's out like touring with like, I don't know, some like rock band or rock group from like the 80s and 70s. There's like they're like doing a tour together in Hawaii. And so I don't know who he's, I don't listen to that kind of music, but Steve's been around. He's done a lot of stuff. And he was saying Javi's interview was the best interview he's ever sat on.
Wow.
And Steve's career is a very long career. And for him to not even know any of the stuff he's talking about was just riveted by this interview. So I can't wait for people to see that. It's going to be awesome.
That's really exciting. Well, speaking of the Blu-ray, you guys already launched an Indiegogo for funding.
Yeah.
But it's still open, right? People can still go.
Yeah. So we what we did is we left it open. There's, I think, 3 perks available. Digital download, $23. The Blu-rays, $42. And then there's the package, which includes those things and some other goodies for $108. So they're all Lost numbers. And those are the three things you can still get. So if anybody wants to help support us, that's a great way to do it. And you're going to get something for it. Yeah. The support has been crazy. Really, really happy with that. Cause I was a nervous wreck. I'd never launched an Indiegogo campaign or any sort of crowdfunding. Taylor and his wife, Emily, who's another producer on the project. They've done Kickstarter before. And this might be the biggest crowdfunding sort of level that they've done.
Yeah.
I guess I think the Ska documentary, they got more backers, but not as much money.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been wonderful.
That's awesome.
It's been wonderful. Yeah. We sold 3 EP executive producer perks. Each were 10 grand. I was like, these aren't going to go anywhere. to the point where I don't think anybody knows this. I don't know what I'm allowed to say or not, but behind the scenes, we got another EP. Someone who was like, you sure you can't hand out another EP credit? And we're like, are you asking us if we want, you know, 10 grand? $10,000. So we have a fourth EP, which is pretty incredible. Like it's been a wild ride. I mean, dude, Lost fans, you want to know what the Lost community's like? These are people who are like ravenous. Lost fans haven't had any new Lost content in 14 years. I mean, and it's one of those things where like, do we want more? You know?
Yeah.
It's that classic thing of like, you know, George Lucas saying everybody wanted to know more about Boba Fett. And so I told them more about Boba Fett in the prequels and they hated it. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, do we want more Lost? Like, I think the majority of the fans now are satisfied with the finale. Some of them are, it's growing on them. Some of them are just like, I like the show, I just don't like the finale. But at the same time, it's like, if you like the finale and you're happy with just sort of trying to piece the rest of the puzzle together, like you don't want more. You don't want to, I don't think it's going to capture that magic again. Yeah. There's something about watching the show on a weekly basis and then doing the water cooler talk. So I don't know if you can capture that again.
Yeah. Especially with the jump from, I mean, everything with the hatch, like the second the hatch was introduced, like, I mean, there was stuff with the polar bear, there's stuff with the smoke monster, but the second the hatch got introduced, like that's when everything like went nuts for me. Like when I got really excited, like everything involved Dharma and all the numbers and everything else, that's when the mystery box like really intrigued me for sure. So,
and that's what's funny is like the studio was against it being a sci-fi show. They didn't want it being a sci-fi show. They wanted it to be legit, like literally the show Survivor, but with actors. And it took them a while to start getting into that sci-fi stuff. You know, the polar bear was just a weird thing. And, you know, but when you got to the hatch and you're like, something's up, it started feeling sci-fi, which is great. And that season 2 opener where you're just like, okay, I have no idea what's going on. This is nuts. Who is this dude? And like, cause we waited a whole summer to see what was in the hatch. We waited a really long time.
Right.
So when we got that sort of answer, it raised like 20 more questions. And I just, I was in it for the sci-fi stuff, which I think is why Lost was popular. It was on a network when there was, you know, before prestige TV was really a thing. I think Sopranos was around. Twin Peaks had come and gone.
Yeah.
But this was like, my mom watched it because it was like a soap opera. I watched it because there was weird sci-fi stuff. You know, some other person probably watched it because I don't know, they just like looking at pretty people. It was shot beautifully. It was shot on film by Larry Fong, who, I mean, this dude, we talked to him too. His first music video, REM's Losing My Religion. Like if you think about that, you can picture that video in your head, what it looks like. His first TV show was Lost. And you know what Lost looks like. This is in the age of, this is right when TVs were turning into like HD widescreen.
right.
720p widescreen. Yeah. So shot on film. And then his first movie, after he was done with Lost, his first movie was 300. I don't know if you remember what that movie 300 looks like, but that's the thing you think of most when you think of 300, what it looks like.
Right.
So he's done some Zack Snyder stuff and Larry Fong, but it's, you know, it was pretty to look at. The cast was easy on the eyes. There was humor. There was horror elements. There was soap opera elements. And then you start kicking in the sci-fi stuff. And then on top of that, you're dumping all these questions like, what's going on with Locke? Why was he in a wheelchair? And all of this stuff, like, it just made it so, like, engaging. You needed to know everything about it. And it just, like, caught the world by storm. Because, like, at the time, like, it would be water cooler talk. Water cooler talk. You talk to your friend at work, you know, the next day about things. But now you have MySpace message boards and stuff that are dedicated just to the show. ABC or Bad Robot created a message board called the Fuselage, which was a Lost-based message board where ABC was getting like the writers in on there and the actors in on there. So they were part of this message board. And then you have DVR where people are able to pause. Do you see that shark go by? It's got a Dharma logo on its tail. And people are DVRing it, rewinding it, screen grabbing it, throwing it up on the internet to these message boards. And all of a sudden, the entire world is all now trying to figure out this puzzle. So it was like, for me, I feel like because of the internet and because of DVR and podcasts also came around at this time, it just created this sort of global phenomenon. And it's nuts, man. It's crazy how big it was. And they haven't rebooted it. They haven't done spinoffs. And I kind of like it that way. But are they just going to let it go? Are they just never going to? They have Marvel and Star Wars. why would they mess with Lost? Because people still joke about the finale of Lost.
Yeah.
It's still a joke on late night talk shows. So why would they? It's the same thing with like my beloved Green Lantern. The Green Lantern movie was a joke and DC and Warner's haven't touched it since.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, like maybe Lost is just that perfect thing that just came through and just nobody meddled with. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, Lost is such a time capsule to me too. And just like thinking about like who I was back then. And then like the only fandom I can think that's like equal for a really divisive finale is probably the Sopranos for sure. In terms of just like having like a lot left on the table, sort of kind of like, here's your ending. Hope you like it. And if not, then you're kind of stuck with it, unfortunately. So,
Do you want them to meddle with Lost? Do you want more Lost?
I don't necessarily want more Lost. Maybe another universe, like another, I would want like a different universe set in the Lost, like a different group of people or like a different story. I wouldn't want them to go back and retread the same thing over again, because that's the whole point of the mystery is that, but when you already know the mystery of the island, then it's just kind of like, it loses its luster. So I think taking the elements of Lost and trying to repurpose it into something else might be interesting, but yeah, I don't know. It's kind of like a once in a while.
What do you mean by knowing the mystery of the island? Like what are you like?
Well, the island has rules and things it does, and once you know what those rules are and what it does, and it kind of like loses the magic of what the possibility of the island could be. So it starts going shrinking into smaller and smaller until, okay, I understand mostly what the island's about, or like what the parameters of the island are versus like the mystery box of, I don't really actually know what this thing means, what it could be, and have endless possibilities as opposed to like, oh, well, this island heals people. This island does this, this, and this. Like, that's what I meant by that specifically.
Okay.
So
I didn't know if you like I didn't know if you like knew what it was. Like, it's kind of a mystical, like the glowing light and stuff is. Yeah. It's like, I didn't care for like the Jake and Men in Black episode, but I mean, I don't know, dude. I really like the finale. I just didn't care for that episode. That it was like, it's like the third to last episode or something. I was just like, I want to see Hurley and Jack and Kate and Sawyer. I don't want to see these two guys.
Yeah.
They're not interesting to me.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. Going back to the documentary, you name drop Locke, one of my favorite characters from the show. Both him and Ben Linus are my two favorite characters from the show. So you interviewed Terry O'Quinn and Michael Emerson, two people that, like, when I think about the intense characters that they played, like, the only people I can just, like, compare them to is like Giancarlo Esposito and Bryan Cranston playing Gus and Walter White.
In terms of
like, how intense they were, like, how did Terry and Michael respond to talking about their roles all these years later from doing those interviews?
Well, it's funny that you brought up those two guys, because those are the two cast interviews I did not sit in on.
Damn it.
they were East Coast. They were East Coast interviews, and there really wasn't a reason for me to go to the East Coast. It was like the week of Comic-Con, and I was setting up for an LA trip. And Michael, we had kind of set up early, but it's like, I don't need to fly to Virginia and then come back to Anaheim and then go down to, so I didn't do the East Coast. Those are like the only two. I have watched both interviews. And I mean, Michael Emerson's great. His interview is wonderful. He's exactly what you want him to be. He understands the assignment to where, you know, if he wants to show off a sinister side, he'll kind of point his direction to camera three, which is a close-up, which is a close-up camera. And Terry's the same. Terry, when Taylor, we shot at Terry's place, and in his living room, he has a season one poster of Lost signed by everybody. So like, these guys like the show, which is great. You know, it helped us out. You know, it's great that they like the show. Did it win them both Emmys? I think it won them both Emmys. Mm-hmm. But you know, I mean, I've watched them. They're good interviews, but it's funny because like, everyone's so excited to see the movie who's a Lost fan. And I've sat through the same question 60 times, you know, all of them. And so it's one of those things where it feels like work, where I'm sitting there and listening to, cause I'll run sound while Taylor, you know, conducts the interview. But there's every once in a while, someone will say something where both me and Taylor will just look up at each other and just be like, yeah, that's going in the movie. You can just tell. Terry had a lot of great moments. And Taylor actually got to shoot Terry, like, do some B-roll out by the beach and stuff. It was really nice. It was really nice. And Michael, we did it in his, like, you know, condo in New York. So no beaches to walk around, but both great. They're both great. They're great.
I'm excited.
Yeah, I wish I could say more, but
that's all good. Are there any other really notable moments from the documentary that like really surprised you that you can
Javi,
share?
Javi was number one. He surprised me in the fact that he made me love Lost more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, during the making of it, the biggest surprise was Mo Ryan's book, which talked about the toxicity in the writer's room of Lost. Right. That was a big day for us because we were about halfway through shooting. We had something like 25 interviews already in the bag, done, complete 25 interviews, which we were thinking was about halfway. And this article drops, and cut to me just trying to get out of the house to like clear my head. So I was going to go for a drive, go shoot some pictures, and got a call from Taylor. So I'm in a parking lot talking to Taylor for an hour about if we should or shouldn't continue the documentary. That was a huge surprise. But I can say anyone who's concerned about that side of the documentary, we are going to bring it up. it's not going to be, you know, we're not going to be like, we're not scathing journalists. We're fans of a show. People are afraid that we're going to be, you know, I've heard people say, oh, you guys are, you know, you guys will believe anything you read. And, you know, why these people wait so long to come out and talk about this stuff. And, you know, there's reasons, because they're still afraid of the repercussions of coming forward. And we do bring it up in the movie. If you've read that article, or you read that chapter on Lost from Orion's book, it's called Burn It Down. It's about the toxicity in Hollywood. Javier is mentioned. Javi is mentioned in that article as someone who was mistreated and bullied and came forward to talk about some other people who weren't able to, you know, share their names or were afraid to share their names. But Javi didn't give a crap. He's like, this is, I'm laying it out on the table. So we talked to Javi and we got that side. We also talked to Damon Lindelof about it, who was on the other side of the coin, who was the head, you know, showrunner who had the toxic people working under him. We also talked to him. So we got both sides of the story, and we got a couple of fan interviews discussing it. But that was a huge shift in our documentary. But I think we've bounced back from it. It was a dark day for us. It blindsided us. We knew that the book was coming and there was stuff in it, but we didn't know exactly what. So we're a little taken aback, because this was going to be, if you've seen like the last blockbuster, Taylor's other movie, about, you know, pop culture stuff, it's fun and it's lighthearted, you know, and that's what this was supposed to be. And now we got to talk about this serious thing that nobody wants to talk about. But I think our point of view is, from that of Lost, from the very beginning of Lost, it's all about redemption. Kate's episode is the first episode after the pilot. It's her being a fugitive. And it's called Tabula Rasa, which means clean slate. And that's the whole thing of Lost, is, you know, redemption. So we're kind of using that as an arc for our movie. Lost is this great thing. There's fandoms. There's people that hate the finale. There's people who like the finale, but the people who hate it may be coming around to liking it. You have the toxic workplace, and sort of some of the actions mentioned in there by Damon and Carlton and some of the other writers. It was 20 years ago, you know, by the time the series ended, it was 14 years ago. Like, who are we to say they don't get a redemption the way that, you know, Kate and Locke and all these other people, Sawyer, right. Like the whole point of Loss is that redemption story. And then like where, you know, people talk about cancel culture and all that shit. Like for me, it's like Loss taught us that you could be redeemed. You could understand your past wrongdoings and learn from that and grow from that. Like when we first meet Sawyer, he's spouting off insensitive nicknames to everybody, especially to Saeed. You know?
Yeah.
But by the end of the series, they're like friends. So it's one of those things where, you know, the real world sucks and the world that Lost exists in sucks, but it's a story about redemption. The whole thing's about redemption. The whole thing's about letting go of the past. Like that's the whole thing with the flashbacks, is they're all hung up on their past, you know? And then later on, spoilers, if you haven't seen Lost, when they're on the island, they get hung up about events that are happening in the future, when the whole thing is about being in the present, being with the people that you're supposed to be with. Make the most of what you have now. You know, if Sawyer, if the a-hole Sawyer never ended up on that island, he would have never met Juliet. And Juliet and Sawyer is the only relationship I care about on Lost. Their story is so good. And that's the thing, like, you know, like my life, when I was 17, my dad left my mom and I was stuck, you know, at home with my mom and not like being really angsty. And that makes me mad. And I wish it never happened. But at the same time, if my dad didn't leave I wouldn't have been with my mom. I wouldn't have had to go get a job. I wouldn't have worked at Disneyland. I wouldn't have met my friend Kelly, who's friends with Ben, whose girlfriend was friends with Stevie, who's been my wife for 20 years. So it's one of those things where what loss teaches me is like, yeah, the past happened and it might be crappy, but think about where you are now. Think about how you don't have to, you know, dwell on that. Live in the present. Deal with your smoke monsters now. By the end of this, when all's said and done, you're going to be really happy that you have the people in your life that you have. You still have that support group. Those, all those people in the church supported Jack, supported Hurley. They all supported each other. And that's what it's about. That's what life's about for me, is this, you know, it's kind of a happy ending. Like, you got the opportunity to spend however many years on this planet to hang out with people, you know, that you were fortunate enough to hang out with, you know. Weird circumstances led me to you. and you know what I mean? And it's great. It's great. So for me, like, all the toxic bullshit sucks. But right. Listen, there's people that have to live with this who have been living with this for 20 years, and they've been trying to either become better or heal from that stuff. And the best way to do it is through talking, communication, and having a support group that's healthy and is willing to get your back, you know, who's willing to fight a smoke monster, you know?
One can only hope that your friend group can help you fight a smoke monster. And related to that, I have one final question for you, Ralph. Yeah. You're part of a very special group that plays a very special game called Fireball Island.
Yeah.
What is Fireball Island, and can you explain the history of your group?
Fireball Island is a board game from Milton Bradley that came out in 1986. I have the manual right here. In 2013, I took this game to my friend Jorge's house. Jorge is played Hurley on Lost. We became friends through the Darmalars. He is a big fan of board games. I've had this board of Fireball Island game board. It's a 3D molded plastic island where you roll marbles to try to knock down other explorers trying to get to a jewel and escape the island. That's the gist of it. I took it to Jorge's because he hadn't heard of it. And I'm like, I'll bring it the next time I show up. I bring the board. Michael Giacchino walks through the door. This is the first time I'm meeting him outside the context of a fan event, because I've been a fan of his since Medal of Honor back in 98, I believe. Mm-hmm. Huge fan of his music, to the point where the U-boat theme in Medal of Honor is the submarine theme in Lost. So go find any scene with the submarine. Oh, wow. And it's Medal of Honor music from the submarine level of Medal of Honor 1. That's how hardcore I'm into Michael Giacchino. I think he's a brilliant composer. Walks through the door. I make eye contact with him because I'm like, holy shit, Michael Giacchino's here. Okay. But he makes a beeline right for me. And I'm like, whoa, 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 what's happening? And he looks at me and says, what's that? And I'm like, oh, it's a board game. It's Fireball Island. He grabs the box and he's like looking at it because the box art is amazing. It's a little out of reach, but it's in that corner somewhere. He reaches for it and he's looking at it and he's like, tell me all about it. And so I start telling him all about it. And he's like, I'm like, in my brain, I'm going, why am I talking to Michael Giacchino right now? Why is this happening? And he's like, he wants to talk to me about this, but kind of, sort of, he's on his phone. He seems distracted. I'm like, whatever. I'm just going to keep talking about this game. I don't care if he's not listening. By the time I get finished describing the game and explaining it, he's like, on eBay, I just bought it. Which, a complete Fireball Island set at the time in 2013 was like $350. Yeah, easily. And I'm like, oh, cool. Well, I hope you like it. Like, you just spent $300+ on a game you never played. So I moved the game to the dining room table, and there's a picture of me showing Jorge Garcia, Michael Giacchino, Michael's family, friends, how to play this board game. Cut to lockdown. I get a text message from Michael saying, hey, I'm thinking about doing a Zoom game every week for Fireball Island. Do you want in? It's going to be me, my son. He said him, his son, Mick, another friend of his, and Jorge. And it's lockdown. I have nothing going on. He's like, yeah, we'll do it every Sunday. I'm like, okay. And so we've been playing Fireball Island pretty much every Sunday since. I think we're in our fourth year. We do have some Sundays off because now that everyone's going back to work, like right. Michael's very busy. Jorge's very busy. Michael's son, Mick, is an awesome composer in his own right. Did Muppets Mayhem. Has done some other things. You can find him on IMDb. Has done additional music for. He did the car chase in the Batman. So that was Mick.
No big deal.
So it's one of those things where I'm like, yeah, absolutely, I'll do this. And we keep a running tally. I've created a Fireball Island board in Roll 20 with moving explorers. We do fireballs a very different way because the fireballs are usually, you know, physics based because they roll down the board.
Right.
This week came up with a thing where we're going to roll blank fireball, roll the dice again, whatever number comes up, that's how many people get hit. Cause there's six of us playing and the dice only goes up to six. So it might only hit two of us. It might hit three, who knows? So we've been doing that for we're in our fourth year now. And it's been wild, like getting to be able, it's so wild. It got to the point where we have shirts.
Of course you do.
If you want to see my Fireball Iron shirt, go to the cuethemusicpodcast.com and look at my Werewolf by Night episode where I review I unbox Michael's vinyl record of Werewolf by Night. I'm wearing my Fireball Island shirt in his honor because all six of us or all five of his opponents in Fireball Island got our names on the crypts inside the mausoleum in Werewolf by Night.
Which is you're dead in the Marvel Universe.
100%. I'm officially dead in the Marvel Universe. So that's been wild, man. And it's gotten to the point where Michael and I are friends. It's weird saying that because I have been a fan of his for so long, but he was so cool. This is how cool Michael is he was one of the first people that we interviewed, had a blast. His interview is great. He also talks about Lost is sort of a time capsule of that time you watched it. It's in one of our private sizzle reels. He gave us an hour and 5 minutes of unreleased, fully orchestrated music for the documentary for nothing. He literally sent me a text message with a Dropbox link and said, here, use this in your documentary. So our movie will have Michael Giacchino music from 2009 that sounds like Lost, but isn't from Lost. It's amazing. Recently at Getting Lost Doc, Instagram and Twitter, we released a video where we're showing all the clapper boards of people from Lost. That's music that's not from Lost. It's from our movie. So check that out. It's so rad, dude. Can you, like, I know he didn't use it specifically, like he didn't create this music for us, but saying that I have a movie with Michael Giacchino music in it is pretty wild.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild for a dude who's just a fan, you know, to become a friend and to get that honor of him. He told me he's been sitting on that music for a while, waiting for the right project to come along and decided it was ours. And I was just like, man, you didn't make me cry. Cause I'm sitting there and I pop on this music and I'm like, it's all this emotion came flooding in, A, because it's his music, but B, because I was sending out emails to people like Evangeline Lilly while I was listening to it. And I'm just, this is my life. This is insane. So it's been wild. It's been really wild. And I can't wait for people to see it. Cause I think it's going to be rad. It's going to be rad. And I think we're going to open up a big old box for you, a new big old mystery box for you. You might want to rethink some stuff about Lost.
When is the
doc? It's so cool.
When does the doc come out officially?
We don't know. We're shooting for September 22nd, 2024, which is the 20th anniversary of Lost, of the pilot. So fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Maybe, streamer will pick us up and give us a ton of money and we'll have to get it finished sooner. I'm looking at the Netflix, who is going to be getting Lost in July, I believe. Might be good to have a documentary to go along with it. This is how much Disney doesn't care about Lost. They're not doing a 20th anniversary documentary about Lost. We're the only ones doing it, because if someone else was doing it, they would have gone to Jorge and they would have gone to Michael and they would have told me. So, maybe we'll start something new.
Crazy. Well, Ralph, I could talk to you for another hour and 15 minutes. It's been so much fun to talk to you, talk about all about Lost. But before we take off, is there anything that you'd like to plug, both for Getting Lost Talk and both for your personal stuff as well? The floor is yours, sir.
I mean, really, at Getting Lost Doc across the board, go to Linktree. You'll find us and all our links to all our socials, but all our socials, including Blue Sky, is at Getting Lost Doc. We have a YouTube channel also. We're doing live streams, and that's the main thing. Like, we want the most eyes on that. If you want to follow Opal Film, that's my last name, and Film together, there's my little Holga camera back there. I've been taking pictures. Nick, you are a photographer. I've seen you do amazing work with models and stuff.
Thank you.
And I just got scans back today of the first time I've shot with a person for the purpose of shooting, like, as a model shoot.
Congrats.
You'll probably see those soon. I think they turned out great. My Pentax didn't really do what it was supposed to do, but my Holgas came out great. So
cool. I'm excited to see.
Shout out to Holga and the 120N.
Medium format for life, baby. It's so much
I love fun. It. Yeah. It's really good. It looks really good. Yeah.
Awesome. Ralph, thank you so much for your time. It was an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And I honestly can't wait for you to see it. I think it's going to be rad.
Yeah, I can't wait either. I'm such a huge fan of Lost, and I'm really excited for you guys just to slam dunk it. So, yeah. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Everybody else, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.